you are listening to Agriculture, a podcast that aims to explore the stories of the people that make up our agricultural industry and culture of farming in Scotland and beyond. On today's episode...
I mentioned earlier, one of my roles is I'm a licensed insolvency practitioner and I have been appointed liquidator in some contentious family situations to sort out matters where family members just could not agree, couldn't even get them round the kitchen table to actually talk, despite me saying, look, you need to go back round that kitchen table, write down what you would all like out of this and let's see if we can make this happen.
I'm Mary Jane Laurie, and in this episode I'm joined by Jen Stewart and we're discussing succession planning. Jen tells us about her own background in farming and how that has helped her with her job as head of rural at Johnson Carmichael. Succession planning can often be a touchy subject, with many farming families putting it off because they perceive it as being too difficult, both in terms of practical considerations and in terms of family dynamics. Today we will talk you through what succession planning is, what to be aware of, and break it down into easy chunks to help you start your own plans. Hi Jen, nice to see you. Thanks for joining us today.
Hello, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Recording this just after Easter, aren't we? So it's a busy time of year for most farmers with IAX and lambing and calving and sowing. So yeah, busy time.
It is very busy, and the good old weather probably hasn't helped things for us so far this year, but it's been a better start to this week with lots of sunshine and no rain.
We've had a few happier farmers coming into the office this week compared to previous weeks. It just helps to get out and get some jobs done when the sun's shining a little bit. Just to introduce you to our listeners, Jen, can you tell us a little bit about your background in farming, please?
Yes, of course. Grew up on our family farm in the Borders alongside my parents and siblings. We had a mixed beef and sheep farm and bred pedigree blackface sheep. So from a young age, I have always loved farming and always helped my dad and my uncle outside and had my own jobs to do on the farm, which I think set me up for a very strong work ethic. And I was a very keen young member of Young Farmers and really made some friends for life through this network and learned some really great skills, actually. And one of those being speech making, which has certainly helped me through my career to date. And then I went to university in Aberdeen and completed my honours degree in business studies and accountancy. And I worked in industry for a few years out in Barcelona and then back to Scotland, where I wanted to continue to do my professional exams and complete my chartered accountancy. So when I joined a firm in Edinburgh, I was asked to step into the insolvency and restructuring department to help out for a few months. And actually, I really enjoyed and embraced the challenge of working in the insolvency team and went on to sit my professional insolvency exams and I qualified as a licensed insolvency practitioner. So handling contentious disputes and difficult conversations is second nature to me and something that I've dealt with throughout all of my professional career. And a few years after this, I met my husband and got married, and we now farm in Fife on his family farm with our three children and my husband's father and brother and his family. Our children, again, are all showing a very keen insight into coming home to the family farm and having careers in agriculture. And we have a mixed farm consisting of beef and sheep and arable at home.
It sounds like a very mirror image of my life, also growing up on a family farm in the Borders with siblings, and then went to Aberdeen University, not to do accountancy, but to do conservation biology. So it's not too dissimilar a background at all. And I think having that sort of childhood on a farm, whilst it's, you know, people can come into agriculture and get a job later on with no agricultural background, I think, as you say, it does give you that understanding. And obviously, with your job in Edinburgh, starting off working in insolvency, it just gives you that extra understanding of the issues that farmers are facing. So jump to now. So you're working for Johnson Carmichael. Can you tell us a bit about your role at Johnson Carmichael?
Absolutely. So my role at Johnson Carmichael, I am a business advisory partner and I head up our rural and landed estates team. I also have the pleasure of leading our Dundee office and I chair our corporate and social responsibility committee for the firm. So I wear quite a few hats. Yeah. And all my roles here are very client focused and I thrive on being able to help clients achieve their goals and ambitions. I do a lot of work with family-owned businesses and regularly help out our farming clients create succession plans and manage those steps with the expert assistance of my tax colleagues in the firm.
So going back to basics then, for anyone that's listening and doesn't know what we mean by the term succession, can you give us a sentence or two to explain what succession is?
Succession is the process of handing a business or a large amount of wealth down to the next generation. This means not only thinking about the future of business operations, but considering the future of management and ownership. Succession planning is an essential part of running a family farming business. Effectively, planning for the future allows you to protect your assets, safeguard your business, and ensure continuity and provide for your family. Succession planning isn't just about planning your retirement by ensuring a smooth transition for those who run the business once you've stepped down and whoever comes after you. You are planning your business legacy, leaving behind your vision and goals for the continued success of that business. And even the most well-intentioned, talented business owners can fail at succession if the family, the ownership, and the business systems haven't been sufficiently prepared for that transition. Too often, family business leaders adopt the approach of doing nothing and hoping the problem will solve itself, and rarely this will happen.
I think the key word there that you used is family, and I think that's what lots of farming families struggle with, because I think farming is quite unique as an industry, that there's a lot of emotions behind family history on a farm. Often the house is all tied to the business. You know, siblings have grown up on the family farm. They've got a lot of happy memories there. And then if there's new business members coming in or parents moving towards retirement, it can be very emotional for everybody. And I think a lot of farmers are never quite ready to retire. And that can be seen by the average age of the Scottish farmer, which is quite elderly compared to other industries. And that's not a bad thing. That's just a sign that, you know, farmers enjoy working. But also it maybe is a sign that they don't quite know how to retire and how to hand things over and how to move on. So in your experience then, Jen, how do you cope with multi-generations when you've got maybe children and new spouses or partners coming into the business and an older set of parents or business partners that are trying to step back? What sort of issues can you come across there?
To address your point there as well, when we're speaking to clients and speaking to the elder generation, more often than not, they're actually now expressing that they wish they had actually dealt with matters earlier and at a younger stage when they were actually, I guess, fitter and more able to deal with this, because they see that the pressures that are mounting up if they haven't actually addressed this situation early enough. And one of the barriers that we do see to, I guess, the elder generation retiring is that they haven't built up enough personal wealth in their own right. And there's always the vision that actually, well, the farm's the pension. So instead of investing and saving any money personally, then everything is ploughed back into the farming business to either purchase more land, purchase more machinery. And that then becomes quite a barrier when they are actually looking to retire. So I suppose that's one of the key challenges. In terms of when is the right time for the next generation to take over? Well, really, the earlier the conversations can start, the better. Having those open and honest discussions and being able to create a plan and understand where everyone's interests lie really, really help. And farming businesses should be reviewing what they're doing regularly and at least annually, you know, when they're planning for the year ahead, if they're catching up with their accountant to review the accounts. It's a great time to actually reflect on the strategy and who the current team is, what the direction of travel is, what are the plans for that business, what uncertainty, and there's certainly plenty of that at the moment, what is there round the corner that you can crystal ball gaze? So it's really important that also when you're considering this succession journey and you're looking to create that plan, that you basically put yourself in other people's shoes as well, and be that those of the parents and the grandparents, because they've built this business up. They'll have made significant sacrifices over the years, and often there's a fear of letting go. And even if that's not in play, you know, managing a loss of income is another challenge, as I'd referenced earlier. But there are always ways that we can help, or that individuals can help with this, by actually pension planning and building up personal wealth outside the business.
I don't think it's ever too early to start pension planning either, is it? So, you know, a lot of, well, now I'm sure you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but it's a legal requirement that for formal employers that they have to enroll their employees in a pension plan unless they choose to opt out. That's probably not the case in a family farming business. So how would you encourage people to think about pension planning, you know, from their first involvement with the family business?
I would really strongly encourage this. And I know that that's something that we are always discussing with clients. And it's saying from an early stage, you've got to actually look at ahead to your retirement and your pension planning. If we look at our government, by the time, you know, a number of the younger generation actually retire, there will probably be no support from the government. So there does actually have to be that element of personal accountability that you're actually building this pot up. And it's a mindset change. And it's something that I think that we all have to be really quite passionate and responsible about to look after that personal wealth. And, you know, it is another way to actually help with the succession elements, because it might be that you're building this pot up and not going to use it yourself, but you could actually be passing that down to a child or family member to try and help with that wider succession plan.
So you've talked there about the sort of financial planning in terms of for retirement. What other financial implications do people need to be thinking about when succession planning? Like, I'm specifically thinking maybe about any sort of tax implications that they need to worry about.
Tax rules can really help families manage their succession journey. And there are lots of tax rules to tap into when making lifetime transfers, for example. Likewise, there are tax reliefs at play that can make it attractive to hold assets until death. Okay. So for example, while most individuals in the UK will suffer UK inheritance tax on death at a 40% tax rate, where you hold certain qualifying or what we often call good assets, then this tax rate can be reduced to nil. And so assets can pass on free of any death tax. For example, agricultural land and buildings owned or occupied for agricultural purposes for a certain period of time will get up to 100% relief for the agricultural value. If there is a development value on the farm, let's say located near a substation or on the outskirts of a town or a village, then another IHT relief called business property relief can relieve any value in the assets over and above their agricultural value. So you can have a situation where no inheritance tax is suffered by the outgoing family member on death. In addition, there's an interaction with capital gains tax, and that's a tax that is usually paid on the disposal of an asset, such that all those historic farming assets, often held at a very low base cost, are uplifted to market value on date of death. And the beauty of this is it washes out gains that often can prevent disposals. So the next generation in this case would take on the farming assets at their market value. So that all sounds great in terms of the argument for holding till death. However, there's no guarantee that these reliefs will remain. Also, there's no incentive here for the next generation to be motivated if they never get any skin in this game, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And the other big risk is, as farming continues to diversify, given all the different land use opportunities, restrictions can come into play to these reliefs. So, for example, the furnished holiday changes, lease agreements, biodiversity schemes and such like can all threaten the availability of reliefs. So tax is a major factor here, but it is one that can actually be beneficial if the right advice is sought at the right time.
So if we're thinking of a scenario there to sort of give some life to that advice then, say we've got a family farm and there's elderly parents still involved in the family business. They're probably the principal partners, but there are children who are now working on the farm. The business hasn't on paper been handed over to the children and the parents were to pass away. From what you're saying, I understand that there would be inheritance tax relief on any agricultural properties, but that might be complicated if they had, say, rental cottages for holiday lets. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. There is always a plan that can actually be made here. And I think it's really important, firstly, to understand what's the family's balance sheet, essentially. and understanding ultimately the ownership as a starting point is critical, how the assets are owned, again, to be able to manage tax neutrally the plan and ensure the assets move to the right place. Again, got to really understand in there what's the size and extent of that current interest. And again, looking at the parents in that scenario, what are the income requirements here, you know, if they are actually passing things on? And what are the capital requirements from the other family members? So you then basically lead on to say, well, how does that gift of an interest in the business get managed? Is it passed across for no consideration, or is there a price put on it? Is it paid over time or on a certain event? And staging events such that tax is minimised or neutralised, for example, if consideration passes, this can see tax reliefs reduced and so tax arising on the transfer mitigated. And then taking that on a step further, other ways of managing capital expectations of siblings might be a property on the farm, or if there are diversified activities, a share in those activities, or perhaps land earmarked for specific development, potentially that stays out of the transfer pot and is made available for all the family. And of course, once these plans are implemented, it has to be reported correctly, both legally and from a tax perspective, or the whole thing can fall down.
So when you're talking there about having plans and reporting correctly, would you advise clients to have things properly written down? You know, they might have had the discussion, where should they write these things down? How should they make sure that they're reporting it all correctly so that if the parents were to pass away, that it was all above board?
Writing everything down is absolutely key. And, you know, this even comes down to the good old question, is a farmhouse a farmhouse? And it's actually, are you keeping a diary? And I know many of our clients do keep a diary, and they've basically been saying what the weather was and, you know, a number of factors. So, you know, documenting all of your sort of unofficial board meetings is very important, but actually following that through with your lawyer to ensure that you actually have a succession plan in place, that your will then reflects what that succession plan is, and that actually you also look to consider appointing a power of attorney, because if you become ill at any stage or have an accident, then having all of these documents in place make it so much easier on those that are left trying to support and run the business if something happens, whether that be an illness or a death. Ensuring that you basically have a will, you have a power of attorney, you have a succession plan, these things can all change, but you need to make sure that you are updating all of these documents as and when any changes actually happen.
I think just with my discussions with clients, that is a big one. The number of farm clients that don't have an up-to-date will or power of attorney is astonishing. And it needn't be complicated to do, does it? Especially if they've got, you know, say they've got four children, two are in the family farm and two are working off the farm. You might think logically that that could be complicated, but it could just be a case of having something written down that the assets are to be divided equally on death. And that's suffices, doesn't it, in this instance? But it might be further forward that they would want to have more detailed plans of how exactly they want that to happen. But having some sort of will is better than nothing.
It is so important to have that, because the other issue that we can come across in Scotland is legal rights. And that is essentially where individuals or family members can have a claim to any net movable assets. And essentially, partnership interests fall into this criteria. And it's very important then that this is all dealt with, because it may be that one family member thinks that they, you know, have the farming business and are able to continue on when somebody passes away. But actually, there are then legal rights claims that come in here that can actually impact all of this. So I can't actually stress the importance of the joined up thinking approach of involving, you know, your accountant, your lawyer and your clients when you're actually trying to sort all of this out, so that you've got lots of different thought processes coming in here to make sure that all the family members' rights are actually protected when you're dealing with something here.
So you mentioned their movable assets. So say it's an owned family business. The land is a non-transferable asset. Is that, I don't know if I'm using the right terminology here, but do you mean anything that could be sold, like livestock or machinery? Is that what you mean, that someone could lay claim to that if they weren't in the will for it?
So essentially, it's any movable assets that are in the partnership, and a partnership interest essentially is a movable asset because it's not fixed. Okay. But if, for example, the land has been included into the partnership accounts, then in theory, that is a partnership asset, and the partnership okay. interest will then form a part of that net movable estate. So therefore, it is so important that when addressing the succession plan, you're actually really looking at, well, what is on that balance sheet, and really understanding who owns what, where does that sit, what are the key wishes and desires of all of the family members, so that you've got an idea of actually who wants what, and is that actually achievable? And actually, is it all viable when you're looking at actually this succession plan? Is the business able to sustain all these requests to potentially split that up? So that, again, all has to be taken into the equation when the succession plan is being drawn up.
So that's where we might hear examples of a family partnership where the land is a totally separate agreement and understanding, and that's why they've done that. They've moved it separately so that on death the farm doesn't need to be sold and divided up, but other assets might be divided up equally between children, say. That's why people do that, is it so that the farm doesn't need to be sold and that it can continue working as it is.
That's right, Mary Jane. And I think it's a key point. And I'd maybe just like to touch on structures, because, you know, when we're looking at the different aspects, you know, of succession, and we're looking at, you know, tax being one of them, and we're looking at then structures. As part of any succession plan, the opportunity should be taken to health check the current structure of the business and consider, is it fit for the purpose? And often farming families operate still via a sole trade or a mm-hmm. partnership model. Often it could be mum and dad. And it's also not uncommon to have a limited company structure. In that case, it would be shares that were gifted versus an interest in the partnership. So to give a wee example here, let's say we have a scenario where we have a family farming partnership, mum and dad. They're being taxed at up to 47% income tax. Bringing in the next generation could actually be quite tax efficient for them. Profits can flow to more family members. And there's no need then at this first step to give next generation essentially a stake in the underlying assets. If there was concern over handing anything over to them too quickly, maybe there's still a bit of confidence and trust to be built that they're actually responsible enough to be a partner in farming family business. But they can have an income share reflective of the work that they do in the business. And that okay. is then rewarding for the individual coming into the partnership. It's also helping with the tax planning. And it's also sort of taking a bite-sized step in addressing that succession journey.
And in that example, Jen, the partners that have been brought in, so the children who are getting a share of the profits, if you like, they don't physically have to draw that money out of the business. Is that right? Is that a paper exercise? So say there's £100,000 worth of profit, and now you've got four partners, they can each take £25,000, but they don't physically take it out of the business, or they don't have to physically take it out of the business. Is that correct? It's just a tax way of doing it. Or they could if they wanted to.
Yep. And then over time, a percentage stake can flow tax-free, usually from the older generation to the next generation, as all parties okay. get comfortable with that arrangement. Okay. And this also gives the older generation access to income, and it lets them start to plan essentially for that retirement over time.
That makes sense. So people can bring in their children, give them a bit of reward for being part of the business, but don't give them the full control, or they don't give them a share in the assets at that stage. It's just
Correct.
A share of profits. Okay. So then the next step, as you say, as they build confidence, might then to be start handing over some of those assets. So how do they go about that? What's the best way to do that?
That comes down to individual circumstances, careful consideration and planning as to, well, what does everybody want in this situation? Getting everybody around the table, saying, well, what family members are involved? Who owns what? Who wants to do what? Does one sibling perhaps want to continue to farm and others just essentially want bought out? It's then looking at, well, is there any debt in that business as well? How can this all be structured? So you're then bringing in your team of advisors, and in that team of advisors, it can often be your accountant, your solicitor, your banker and any agricultural consultant that you might be working with to actually give a view on, well, how sustainable is the business going forward? What actually stages might this business need to achieve, different goals and targets that it has to actually get to essentially be able to buy out some siblings? It might be if there is, you know, a different project happening that requires more funding, ownership might actually have to be passed on to allow any funding to be secured essentially on those assets. So there's not a one size fits all here as to how and when the assets essentially should be transferred. It's about actually having careful discussions with advisors, outlining what it is you would actually like to do, and then taking into account the tax planning that might actually help with transferring of the assets, the timing of that to also fit with the desires of all of the individuals involved.
And you mentioned there about timing it so that somebody might take advantage of a new development in the business. And I'm thinking of, under the Rural Payments Grant, there was a grant for new entrants, and it was a new entrant capital grant, or you could also get young farmers top up to subsidy. So we saw a lot of farms then looking at their business structure and thinking, actually, son's been home from university or daughter's been home from university for 5 years. They're not a partner in the business, but they brought them in at that point and they had to make them a majority partner in order to secure these grants. And whilst I would always advise against doing that in order to just get the grant, it was actually a good way to encourage people to really think about succession planning, that little financial benefit from doing it, to get a grant, say, to help put up a new cattle handling facility or the top up to the basic payment. So we did actually see a lot of family farms looking at the business structure at that time. Do you think there'll be anything like that again in the future, or are we crystal ball gazing to guess that?
I think we're crystal ball gazing, but I definitely think we will see more of this direction of travel. Mm-hmm. I also think that when we are looking to speak to the banks and any of the financial institutions, they're looking at the management team involved in the family farming business. And actually, if they are looking to secure any lending or ongoing facilities, the bank want to see that the next generation are actually involved here, okay, and that there is a team that will be able to be there to drive that business forward. So I think that we're going to see it in a number of aspects in the supply chain in our sector, that they will be looking at when is that next generation going to be more involved.
So we've been talking about sort of active succession planning there, people taking initiative and starting succession planning themselves. Can you give any examples of where succession planning hasn't been done in time and what the implications might have been? You know, inheritance tax or issues with land needing to be sold or divided up in a way. Can you give us some examples just so we can picture what some of the issues might be?
Well, it's always trickier to deal with succession when someone has died, and even more so when there is no plan or no will. If nobody knows what was actually meant to happen, then that's actually when we can see some sort of family disputes and contentious situations arising. At what is already an incredibly stressful time, if somebody has lost a family member, or if the family member becomes ill, and actually you're scrambling about trying to sort out, you know, succession planning, tax planning, who's going to get what, and that really adds a lot of stress and pressure to situations, and it becomes a very, very expensive process for the families as well. So that's certainly one example of when things are not going so well. I mentioned earlier, one of my roles is that I'm a licensed insolvency practitioner, and I have been appointed liquidator in some contentious family situations to sort out matters where family members just could not agree, couldn't even get them round the kitchen table to actually talk, despite me saying, look, you need to go back round that kitchen table, write down what you would all like out of this, and let's see if we can make this happen. If this isn't going to happen and you're not actually going to agree, then I would be appointed as liquidator to sort this out, take control of the situation. It's a court process, therefore the expenses do mount up, and actually everybody then still doesn't get what they want, and it may be that the actual business has to be sold in order to come to a solution there. So that can be quite difficult, and that adds a huge amount of stress to a lot of people that really could be avoided, could a plan actually just be put in place. And that takes me back to really what I mentioned earlier, that when people are considering succession, a key point that has to be looked at is how viable is this business and how can it all actually be split up? And that's where, again, if there are some assets and personal wealth built up outside of the farming business, it may be that non-farming siblings could benefit from these assets. And that, again, could be pensions that we've already mentioned, but it also could be through life insurance. And again, many people think, well, what is the point in actually having the life assurance policies? Well, it's actually another asset that is there that upon death, it can be passed on to a child or a sibling to be able to allow the family farming business to continue.
You made a key point there about the expectations of what people expect out of the business, and that's when it can go horribly wrong. And as you talked about there, your insolvency experience of families that just can't even sit down to talk about it anymore. And that's so sad. And I'm sure we all know farming families where the business has had to be sold and the land's been divided up. And as you say, nobody actually got what they wanted at the end of the day. So it is very difficult to have these conversations. And I've been involved with some very proactive clients, and I'm not a succession specialist by any manner of means, but you know, involving an agriculture consultant that knows your business and maybe is just a friendly ear to listen in and say, right, well, you know, father, you've had your say, son or daughter, or often the spouse as well will be quiet at these meetings. You know, someone that's been married into the business will think, I can't say anything because I'm not involved. But 9 times out of 10, they are very involved, even if they're not directly a partner. They are often supporting their spouses in the business. And I think it's really key that people understand that these conversations need to happen while everyone is getting on to manage expectations so that everybody knows at the end of the day when the parents pass away or step to retirement what's going to happen and that everyone feels that they've been listened to. So I've been in meetings with clients where I've just sat and I've literally said very little, but just having an external person there to kind of keep things calm is often a good idea, isn't it?
Absolutely, Mary Jane. And I think that, you know, we also have in our industry some mediators and facilitators that will actually help, you know, address these situations if it is becoming a little bit challenging to get everybody around the table. And they will do exactly what you've just said there, is actually try and open up that conversation, give everybody the chance to actually speak, you know, set out what it is that they would actually like to do. But often we see that the succession plan is generally triggered by a life event, and that could be, you know, a marriage, a death, a diversification project happening on the farm, or perhaps a child coming back from university and college. And really, it's looking to really start and progress these conversations so that actually the business can remain sustainable as well. Because, you know, there are so many uncertainties in our sector at the moment, whether that be the political agenda, whether it's the atrocious weather, whether it's the new environmental schemes, the pressure that we're seeing on food security and the increased work and cost that farmers are actually having to bear. So actually allowing the next generation to be able to plan for this, perhaps pivot the business, not do things that have always traditionally been done that might not actually generate the income that is required to keep the business financially sustainable any longer. It's just so important that fresh energy and ideas are actually implemented in the business to make sure it actually survives.
Yeah, you're totally right. And I think you've said a few times about people making sure that their business is financially sound. And I'm sure there will be people listening thinking, my business can't afford to bring in the next generation at this stage. You know, it can't afford to have 2 families or 3 families drawing down where traditionally there was only one. And that might be a really tough decision if they haven't built up that personal wealth behind them and they can't see a way to do that either, you know, particularly tenant farmers or smaller farms where there just isn't enough land or capital or assets in order to bring extra family members or partners into the business. That can be a very difficult decision at that point for someone to completely remove themselves from the business in order for someone else to come in.
Yeah. Absolutely, Mary Jane. And I think that actually sometimes some difficult decisions need to be taken, though, because again, you're looking at, okay, well, if the business can't sustain two families, as you've mentioned there, well, actually, what's the outcome here? And is it that there has to be off-farm income generated to come in to allow people to continue with the business if they are enjoying the farming as a lifestyle business as opposed to trying to actually make a living from that? So the farming business can only generate what it is actually generating. And if it is able to pivot and able to do different things to be able to generate more income and consider other opportunities such as renewable, solar, hospitality and tourism, whatever that might be, but you've got to take into account where your geography is, what your skill set is, what your finances, if you're able to actually fund any projects to set any of these things up. But unfortunately, in some scenarios, if there is not enough personal wealth actually built up to allow a generation to retire, to let the next generation come in, then the next generation actually have to have a really hard think about whether they are going to continue in the business or whether they've got to explore other options.
Yeah, I think that's true, and that can be very emotive as well, because they've had that lifestyle and childhood involved in the family farm, and then, you know, accepting that maybe it's not going to work out at this time for them. I'm also thinking of scenarios just through my clients. I'm in the Lothian, so we've obviously got quite a big arable area where we are, and contract farming is quite a popular way for some farmers to maybe step back a bit but still hold on to the farm, and it keeps them still seen as actively farming. Can you explain how contract farming is important for inheritance tax and tax relief and things on the farmhouse and that sort of thing?
What I would like to say is I myself, I'm not a tax expert, and I would defer any of the complex tax questions to my colleagues. But what I would say is there is always a way to do these things. And we are seeing an increased number of contract farming arrangements coming into play, and actually it's quite a successful outcome in some scenarios whereby you actually have a generation already in farming but are looking to retire. Their children perhaps are away doing further qualifications and are not quite ready to come home yet, but might actually want to come home in due course. So actually parents don't want to actually sell the land or the assets, but in theory they want somebody to look after that for a period of time until perhaps the next generation are ready to come home. And we are seeing a lot more of the contract farming arrangements coming into play here. And what we're also seeing is that if farming businesses have actually diversified and, for example, have a hospitality element or a food and drink element to the business, we're making sure that they've got the structure right in the business that it can actually be hived off as a separate entity and sold. So when actually people are looking to set these enterprises up, it's very important that the right advice is taken so that actually one element of the business could actually be sold off, but you still could keep perhaps some of the land and buildings that actually you want to retain down the family generation line.
And so we've talked about how things can go wrong and things to consider. Can you give us an example of maybe among your clients, or just a fictional example of succession planning done well, what was done right about it and why it worked?
Yes, absolutely. And you know, these are the ones that we absolutely love. And it's the best examples we see in our day-to-day work is where there is really good communication. There's open and honest conversations, and decisions have been made at a relatively early stage, and everyone is aware of what is happening. And, you know, sometimes in these instances, not everybody is entirely satisfied with what the outcome might be, but they know, they've been made aware, and they've had time to be able to adjust to that and actually pivot their career path if they're not going to be the one that's at home on the family farm. You know, telling farming children that they are actually the ones that are going to take the farm forward because they've invested all of the time in it, and advising them that they have to buy out siblings that potentially that are not involved and not there on a day-to-day basis, but actually giving them enough time to be able to buy those siblings out so they're not having to sell off assets to have to do that. So it's where there's been clear communication, a plan has been put in place, there's transparency there, and actually it results in a happier family environment because it actually prevents fallouts. And all the legal documentation is then backed up to essentially verify all those decisions that have actually been made.
I mean, that all sounds lovely and harmonious and sensible and straightforward. Why do you think people put it off then, Jen?
I think there's an element of, as we touched on, it's their livelihood. I think that, you know, generally people that work in the agricultural sector are so incredibly passionate about what they do. Often they don't actually have any hobbies off farm as well. So it's a case of going, well, actually, you know, if I'm not farming, what on earth am I actually going to do? So there's that element. There is the not having enough personal wealth to allow them to actually retire. There's the fear of, you know, spouses coming in and, you know, what would happen if a divorce happens. But, you know, there are so many solutions to these potential problems. And we're actually seeing a rise in postnuptial agreements coming into play.
Oh, really?
That if there is a fear that actually the business may go out of the family, well, then there are preventative measures that actually can be put in place to stop that. So that's about having a conversation with your professional advisors to see how you can mitigate these things so that you don't stop the succession journey actually continuing. So to summarize, that really is, it's the lack of communication, it's a fear of letting go and not having the personal wealth built up. But all of these problems can be overcome with careful planning, solutions and discussions from an early stage.
And I think from what I've heard you talk about today, by ignoring it and putting it off, it just makes everything 100 times worse. And you're probably going to end up, you know, there's no disrespect to people in the profession, but, you know, lawyers, accountants, financial planners, they're all very expensive, but it's less expensive to involve them from the start than, as you, your scenario earlier, where it might end up in court and then you've got to pay way more to sort it out. So you're probably better off biting the bullet, paying for the consultancy fees that you need early on, everyone's happy, rather than waiting till that fallout point. So just to summarize then, Jen, can you give us your top tips, your takeaway messages for people that are listening to this and haven't started their succession planning? What should they be thinking about? How do they get started?
Well, I think the first thing is to have an honest and open discussion with all the family members that are involved. Create a plan and understand where everyone's interests lie. And bite-sized steps often are more achievable versus a full handover, because it's easier to actually embrace that. So bite-sized steps, like I mentioned, with the, you know, the share in the partnership profits, as opposed to actually transferring any assets immediately. Use the tax reliefs and exemptions to achieve your succession goals, and where possible, improve overall tax efficiency. So please never think, I can't address this because there's just going to be too much tax to pay. That's not the case. It's a case of actually looking at it and how can you plan to be able to mitigate that and incorporate that into the overall plan. Make a will and get a power of attorney. And really look at actually making some pension contributions. So instead of actually looking at how you can invest further in the land or purchase more machinery, is there anything you can be doing to build up a little bit of your own personal wealth alongside that? And engage your professional advisors at an early stage and see them as part of your team from the outset. And like you mentioned, Mary Jane, there might be the fear of it's far too expensive. It will actually, it'll save you money, it'll save on family fallouts. Once you get it all sorted, it's actually quite a relief that people know that there is a plan in place.
Thank you, Jen. That was really clear for everyone to have some take-home messages of what they should be thinking about. It's worth also mentioning at this point that at the moment there is FAS funding through specialist plans for succession planning. It's only £1,000, but it might help just someone that's thinking about getting started to utilise that specialist plan funding, and you can find out more about that on the FAS website. Thank you very much for your time today, Jen. It's been really nice speaking to you.
Thank you very much for inviting me on to talk about this subject. Like I've said, I'm very passionate about it, and if I can help anybody with their succession planning, please do not hesitate to get in touch.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Agriculture. If you'd like to get in touch or find out more about succession planning, you can find links in the show notes. This episode was presented by me, Mary Jane Laurie, produced by Kerry Hammond and edited by Ross McKenzie in association with the Scottish Government.
The Farm Advisory Service Podcast. Audio advice on livestock, crops and soils, environment, rural business, and more. Brought to you in association with the Scottish Government.